I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
The f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
Jax and Jax, I'm Tom Ryan on the board. The S&P futures are up 21, NASDAQ futures up 100 as we... continue a rally after a little bit of a pause day yesterday. Should have realized it was just a pause day and got even longer as we seem to be have the go-ahead here for depths yet to be sounded on the market. Stuff is just continuing to run up. We have obviously, I think, people sneaking money into the system on all countries. Maybe not as much here, but still, it all gets into the same pool. We have the professor, Mr. Carl. Carly with us. Is he Willis Ryan? I'm hoping Carlo wasn't the guy driving this container ship into this bridge in Baltimore. This is quite a scene this morning. If anybody hasn't seen this, how would you like to be just driving across on the bridge, minding your own business, and somebody whacked the bridge and you end up in the water? That's what happened to a bunch of people here. A couple got rescued, the rest not so much. So not so good. If you're up trolling around on your computer, take a look at the pictures of that thing, and it looks pretty awful. Anyway, the market is up pretty much across the board here. We've got gold up, we've got everything up. So gold 2198, so almost 2200. We'll see where that heads up. Everything is just, I think a lot of it has to do, I don't think our central bank is pouring the money in, but China sure is, and Japan seems to be. So we're pumping everybody. Matter of fact, let's take a look over in Asia. What we've got going there, we've got the because the Nikkei has been an absolute tear, and we'll see if they still are. We have the, actually it's down 16 points here, but the Hang Seng's up 144, China up 5, so we have pretty much rallies across the board over in Europe, up just a little bit. DAX up 90, everybody else is pretty much flat. But I wonder where our friend Carl is this morning. He's usually steady Eddie on Tuesday mornings. But anyway, we have been talking lately about... kind of a lot of stuff what's going on in the market, and people, and I noticed that a lot of the retail people that call me and so forth, whenever we get into one of these extreme run-ups like we have now, we did it in 2000, actually 97, we did it in 2000, we did it a bunch of times, 2007, you always find people that have had any kind of a protected program or have any sort of a conservative program, whether they're partially in fixed income or whatever they are. Thought that was Carl, isn't that? We have people immediately feeling like they are in the wrong program, and that they want to be in the one that goes up. I even had people at the health club last night ask me, "Where should I be? Bitcoin should be an AI." Where it, this fear of missing out is really a. It's a tough thing. You have retail people, and sometimes, I know a lot of money managers, and they'll say, have the big meeting in December, and all of a sudden somebody will say, if I can make, my goal is 7% a year, 8% a year, all of a sudden you'll see the market's up some, and why aren't I in those stocks, and you got to get me in them. And it's, it can get, you know, it can get interesting because you're constantly chasing the, you know, the game that's, it is another place. And if you just keep going from spot to spot and buying into the stuff that made money last month, you know, sometimes there's a streak there and you can get another few months out of it, and sometimes not so much. And I think at this point, to consider your, to have a, especially this year with, you know, a decent start we've had, to have almost another beginning of the year look at your portfolio and say, where are we? You know, you might almost need a rebalancing, you know, here at the end of March, which is unusual, but every year is unusual these days, it seems. So, I mean, I'm not so sure that you should be ignoring, you know, what's going on. I mean, I have some people who, that I know had NVIDIA and waited and sold it at 950. And now today it's 961 and they're probably pissed off. You know, maybe it's going to go to 1,000 or whatever, but you can't be all that afraid to leave a little something for the next guy if you've had a nice run. And you ask yourself, would I buy it here? That's the question you constantly have to ask yourself. If I gave you this money today, would you go out and buy this stock? Well, no, but I can't sell it either because look, it's made money for me. So just be careful. These companies don't care about you, don't care about them. It's an investment. And if you get to the point where you wouldn't buy it there, you know, find a way to sell it, find a way to protect it, find something. I mean, I really don't want to see a lot of the listeners or clients or anybody, if we end up having the inevitable sell-off, which we do, and a lot of times the sell-offs are just a buying opportunity, but someday, somewhere, we're going to have, you know, a week where we're going to be down somewhat. You know, there's going to be some problem someplace. There always is. And the question is, do you want to have some money in the bank to be able to buy then, or will it be the real number, or do you think these valuations are going to be here forever? Or is it going to be a constant? I mean, I really believe that if the central banks are going to continue to pour money into the system and inflate assets, you have to have some assets. I mean, you can't be zero in stock right now. I mean, I don't think. I mean, who knows? I mean, we could go down tomorrow and say, well, this guy, you know, he's bullish all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden we go the other way. We have Kevin. Kevin, how are you, bud? What'd you do? Take out Carl?
Hey, I'm just being the fake Carl.
Oh, okay. So maybe you took him out or something, you know.
Sounds like you needed some help, so thought I would.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about markets for a whole hour, you know. I mean, I could, but it.
That's no fun.
No, it's no fun. So what do you think of?
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, listeners. How's everybody doing?
Yeah. What is the drill with the basketball? I saw Caitlin Clark played well last night, although it was that team game a run.
Well, you know, remember LSU with Pete Maravich?
Yeah.
And what was that team like? What do you remember about him?
I remember he was unreal.
He was unreal. Yeah. Did they ever play in the NCAA tournament?
I don't think they did. Did they?
No, they didn't, because in those days only conference champions played.
Yeah.
And then a select group from the independents, of which there were a ton of independents, because there weren't nearly as many conferences. So Maravich was far and away a great player, and then had played with a bunch of role players, a bunch of good, you know, good basketball players, but not outstanding basketball players. So he poured down a lot of points. He was an incredible player. His father was the coach, which was why he played for that team, and he piled up the points. I think that's a little bit like the situation in Iowa, where you know, they have a good team, they have good ball players on their team, no doubt about it, but nobody else who's really going to step up and you know, kind of play Robin to Clark's Batman. And so she's got to put down a lot of points to win, and that makes Iowa a beatable team. You really can't cover her, and they do a great job of setting screens and doing everything they can to get her open. But in the end, you know, the weakness is, if you can slow her down a little bit, you can stop the other people.
Well, I don't know if anybody can handle that one team. Was it North Carolina?
South Carolina,
yeah.
Yeah, South Carolina's really good. They haven't lost yet.
Do they have to play anybody decent before Notre Dame, so maybe they could lose?
They play Indiana tomorrow. No, they'll beat, or next game, they'll beat Indiana.
So that leaves them with the Irish, assuming the Irish win.
So the Irish, if the Irish can get past Oregon, they will. Their road is likely to stop. You know, I mean, you never know. You may have one of those games where a couple players shoot out of their minds and make it interesting, sort of like who was it? Oakland did. You know, when that one guy knocking down 10 three-pointers.
Yeah.
You never know if there's an X factor on a given day, but you know, likely, really. Notre Dame played South Carolina in their opener in the season. They went to France and played, and I think they lost by about 30 points. Hannah Hidalgo had over 30 points herself, but the others didn't. And maybe they won't be so intimidated now. But you know, when you're playing essentially Iron Six, you got a seventh you can bring off the bench for a few minutes once in a while. But when you're essentially playing Iron Six and you have to go up against a great team like that, you better be really, really good with those Iron Six. Now, Notre Dame won a national championship a few years ago doing the same thing. They had four torn ACLs sitting on the bench. So they, with a six-player rotation, they won the national championship. But four of those players were, you know, legendary players. not only among the greatest in program history, but really kind of, you know, college basketball Hall of Fame caliber players. And then the fourth one was as good a leader as you could ever imagine and still a really good ball player. And that was Maddie Westfeld, who's plays on their team now. It was her older sister. So it really takes a lot to win when you have that kind of, you lack that kind of depth and you're going.
Well, basketball, you know, the game is short. You know, 40 minutes is not very long. And so somebody gets out ahead. I mean, look what happened to the Bulls last night. They beat the Wizards last week by 30. Last night, some guy in the Wizards comes off the bench and he was unheard of, and putting him in the Bulls. This guy Donovan's supposedly a pretty good coach, but these guys are—they're somewhat clueless. They were like 0 for their first 15 or something from 3 point. And what do you think they do? They shoot more 3 points.
You know, I had that conversation once with back when I was covering the Irish, and I decided I would write an article about shooters and shooters' mentality. And I asked the guys, you know, what do you do when you miss a bunch of shots? And with one exception, only one exception, they all said, look, if it's an open shot and it's a good shot in the flow of the offense, I take it, period. That's it. That's the mindset. The only exception was Jaron Grant, who I knew was a really streaky shooter. And I also, having done my homework on all of these before I start asking the questions, I also knew that if he missed the first two or three shots, that he just sort of shut down three-point shooting. I could tell that looking at the games, you know, logs. And so, yeah, he was the only one who said, oh, yeah, I heat check early, and if I'm hot, I keep taking him, and if I'm not, I don't.
Well, I think there's a difference between when you're at that level of ball, and somebody... you know, whips you a good one at the free throw line and you are ready for it and your feet are in the right place, to not take it really screws up your offense. I mean,
hardly anybody passes on that shot.
Well, what I'm saying, even on a three-pointer, there's three-pointers and then there's three-pointers. There's ones where you get yourself in your spot and you're ready to go, and they get you the ball and nobody's around you and your feet are right where they're supposed to be and you're not the center trying to take the three-pointer, although the center's not, I can really play. You're crazy to pass it up. But what I see, that's not what I see. What I see is if you miss 10 in a row, the next guy heaves one when he's not even ready just to prove we can do it. They keep taking them when they're more and more not ready. And that's a tough shot. I mean, even for these guys, even Steph Curry, if he's off balance, he's not his percentage. You know, I mean, but these guys, it's like they work for more and more and more instead of less and less. I'm not saying you should ever pass one up. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm saying I can tell by looking at all the basketball I've played whether are they really Are they just, they're not even trying to go inside now. It's if one falls in your lap, you have to take it. There's no doubt about that.
Actually, you know, what the statistics tell them to do is you either want to score at the rim, as you know, right near the rim, or you want to score from three pointers. They really don't work a lot of offense for mid-range jumpers. And you know, I get it that there's data that supports that, but somehow I think a two-point jumper is still good. It's a good thing. Here's when I shake my head, it's when I see a guy taking a three-point shot, especially from a lot of distance, you know, from well past the line, and I sit there and say, you took that in the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. They would have been happy if you were taking that with the shot clock expiring. So why take it now?
Right. Well, that's, I mean, there is a certain amount of...
Run your damn offense.
Well, yeah. I don't, what do you make of this guy in Toronto and the gambling stuff? I mean, did we predict this or what?
Which guy in Toronto?
Well, I was just hearing on the way in. Some dude was betting on himself. Which is...
plays for the Raptors?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean,
That's a problem.
Yeah, well, it's a problem. I'll find the guy. Or Ryan Diggin, find the guy. If he bet on how many points he was going to get in the game, he'd bet against himself and he'd take himself out if they had the lead or something. I don't think he threw any games, but...
Oh, he's not playing pro basketball anymore, is he?
If he isn't, it's recent.
No, but I think if he's busted, he should be suspended and banned.
You're your buddy yesterday, Pete Rose. In today's world, he'd be fine.
Well, no, he still wouldn't because he still bet on baseball.
Well, but
he bet on games that they were in. He said, "Well, I never bet against us." You know, that was part of his defense at the time. And while that's fine, as a manager, that could very well shape what you choose to do. For example, you might have your closers pitched 4 days in a row, and because you have a big bet down on the game, you'll march them out there even though you wouldn't normally because you really need to preserve that arm. So that would be an example of, I don't care if you bet on your own team, it can affect your strategy.
On January 26th, a guy by the name of... John Tay Porter. I don't know if you've ever seen him play. I guess
no,
I have.
Okay.
On January 26th, Porter left the game against the Clippers due to a supposed aggravation of an eye injury. There was increased betting on the under for his points, rebounds, assists, and 3-point props. He had under in each category. On March 20, he left the game of the Kings with an illness. After only 3 minutes, the under hit on his various props. There you go.
Wow. He really, really needs the money because NBA players don't make enough.
Yeah, yeah.
What an idiot.
Well, the thing of it is, though, but not just him. People were trying to do whatever they could to bet Jonte Porter props against the Clippers. So there wasn't just him because evidently there was unusual betting on it, and that's how they found it. So it almost seems like, you know, this is just total speculation, it almost seems like he owed somebody some money, and they put the bets down. Maybe not even him.
Could very well be true. It's also possible that most fervent bettors figured it out before the NBA did.
People were trying to do whatever they could to get Jonte Porter props against the Clippers. An undimed source from a sports book told ESPN. And then just a few days ago, the same thing. We had a bunch of people trying to bet under for more. So there. So wow. It wasn't like he was running around doing it himself. And this is what we got. This guy should be on Stacks and Jacks. Although, let me tell you who wrote this article. This is on Pro Football something. Mike Florio.
I know who he is.
We know who he is. He says, "Oh, it's difficult for one specific player to influence the outcome of a wager and the final score of a game. He has major influence on his individual props, especially the unders. The NFL had an issue with that dynamic during the 2023 season when Falcons running back Bijan Robinson barely played in a Week 17 game against the Buccaneers due to an undisclosed illness. The Falcons were fined $75,000, and former Falcons coach Arthur Smith was fined $25,000. I didn't know about that, did you?
No, I didn't know about that, but that's crazy because, yeah, Robinson is, you know, he was a big first-round draft pick, you know, just recently. Like, was that last year or the year before?
It feels like the tip of an iceberg. It eventually could result in widespread federal regulation. Now, how exactly is federal regulation going to help?
How does federal regulation ever help?
I mean, it's there needs to be regulation. I mean, there needs to be regulation on the trading floor. No, there wasn't. People police that on their own because if somebody ever stole a trade, they stole it from you. So when you have enough competition, people police themselves in a way better way than four idiot regulators standing around would ever do.
Well, you just have to wait for the words. Those words. We have to have regulation to make sure this never, ever happens again.
And then when it happens again, we need more regulation and more regulation.
That's right. That's right, because we need, you know, we have ineffective regulation that doesn't work. So more of it is the solution.
Why don't we just not have these prop bets and stuff, knowing that they are an absolute temptation to everybody?
You talk, Tom.
I know, we always have to find these ways to, like, tax money out of people that, in addition to taxes. Isn't it unreal? I mean, when you come right down to it, and again, this is gonna sound like a... Because I obviously loved, I used to love to gamble, and I obviously trading when you investing for people is surely not gambling, but once in a great while, if you think, you know, some stock is way up too high in a day and you look for it to fade, I suppose that's somewhat of a gamble. You can say it's an informed bet, but it's something. I don't if you're doing a one day trade or something, but the idea, I mean, what are we doing with this? For the state, for the individual football bettor, okay, and I'm not, you know, people love it. They love, you know, they love doing their fantasy, they love doing their stuff, and I enjoy it too. So it's not like I'm, but you have to understand, you can't be a dummy. For the state, it's all revenue. It's money out of their population. And if you think that you're going to beat the rest of the dummies doing the same thing, that's very interesting, but you could just be one of the dummies. And at the end of the day, the state gets more and more money out of you. It's like another tax. But why do people think it isn't? They think it's this is great, great. What did the guy say in Animal House? This is great. You know, the fat guy. I mean,
yeah.
Flounder. But it's not great for you. I might win the lottery. Okay, you may win the lottery, but this week the state's taking this money for the rest, and they don't care if you win. They get their piece before you get yours. And even the truth in lending, you know, when the Powerball goes over like a half a billion, we put $2 a piece in the office. I'm looking at this stuff, Kevin. $758 million. Oh, by the way, if you want the money today, it's $358. Well, then it's not. If PTI did that, we'd be in jail. It's not $758. It's $358, right?
Well, could be if you don't want to take the payout.
But I'm saying that anything. That I give you. I mean, if I were to say, Kevin, let's bet $200, or even if I said, I'll give you $200 for your car. Okay, I hope it's be a pretty crummy car for that. And they may say, oh no, I'm not giving you $200. I'm giving you $200 over the next 10 years. But wouldn't that be like kind of untruth in salesmanship of some kind? Just saying.
Call it untruth, but you'd go with a lie.
Kevin, I think we have Joel calling in.
Bold-faced lie.
Yeah. Well, hey, I think we have Joel calling in for 15. Right. Why don't you hang around in case Carl doesn't come back? Because Kenny is lecturing on a cruise of all places. I'd love to be on.
I've seen some of his Twitter stuff. So, okay, yeah, I'll hang out.
SP Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 82, a little bit down from where we were, but still pretty good rally. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas. ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and
Hello,
Arizona.
This is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm around on the board. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 87. And no matter how bad your day might be going here, it can't be as bad as the people on this Baltimore Bridge when it got whacked by this ship and now they're in the water. That's a way to start your day, just saying. Dow futures up 88. Over in Europe, we've got The DAX up 101.6%, the FTSE down a point, call that flat. CAC around up 10.1%, not much going on there either. 81.62, old number on the CAC around. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 16 points, over 40,000, 40,398, call that flat. Hang Seng up 144.9%, 16,618, trying to get back to 17, maybe they will. Shanghai up 5, 3,031, hanging over the 3,000 number, but not by a lot. Yesterday, the inside day, Dow's been getting whacked. A couple individual stocks in the Dow, but the market has not been going down very much, even in the days it goes down. On Friday, the Dow was down like 305, even though the other indexes were like unchanged. S&P was down 16, NASDAQ up 44. So we've made that back already this morning in the pre-market. Bonds, down 1 basis point, 4.24. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.35. Japan up 1 basis point, 0.74. So not much going on in the interest rate patch either. Oil, 15 cents, 82.10. As it continues to creep a little bit, gas was up 35 cents over on the week when I've got some Sunday, so that's not good. Brent up 6 cents, 86.81. Natural gas unchanged, 162. Wow, 162. Shows you how well warm this winter has been. RBOB unchanged, 274. Plus, you probably find your gas bills higher than last year, even though the gas is lower. Funny how that works. Foreign exchange, 108.5 on the euros, pretty much right where it's been. British pound, same thing, 127 roughly. British pound might be down a hair against the dollar. Gold up 1960, 2217. Wow. Over 22, we'll see if that keeps going. Silver unchanged, 2490. Silver's kind of lagging here a little bit. Doesn't mean it'll catch up, but it is lagging a little bit. Copper hanging in there at 401. We have Bitcoin down 172, but still over 70,000, 70,660. Ryan, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Hey, everybody. Well, which would you like first, Tom? I can do any of those three.
Well, the Bulls lost. That's all you really need in the sports.
Oh, yeah, that's right. 105 to 107. That's honestly quite rough. That feels bad.
We've already talked about the guy gambling, so...
Right. Like, I feel bad inside.
Oh,
you know?
God.
I just...
They're locked in the play-in spot for the opportunity to get their ass kicked by Boston, so they're kind of stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't say I disagree with that. Well, I mean, if you want to keep talking losing, the Cubs lost 3-6 to the Cardinals. The Sox lost 3-7 to the Rockies. However, the Blackhawks did beat the Sharks 5-4 the other day. Can you believe that, Tom?
Yeah. Well, Blackhawks are playing a little better, looks like.
Yeah. I mean, good for them. I'll take whatever good news I can get, right?
We got crummy weather.
Indeed. Not only that, it is currently 49 degrees outside and a bit rainy, with precipitation likely later on tonight. We're looking at a high of 52 degrees in Chicago with general cloudiness through tomorrow. In regards to Phoenix, Arizona, it is currently 57 degrees, and at the very least, they will mostly be sunny with a high of 70 today. Inbound Kennedy, looking at 58 minutes. Inbound Edens, 57 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower, despite, construction, that's the word I'm looking for. Looking at about 40 minutes there. Inbound Dan Ryan, 23 minutes. And the Stevenson, pulling us in at a solid 30 minutes today.
Oh, well, you were on a Stevenson, right?
Yes, I was. Not terrible.
It wasn't bad?
I mean, as of, I'd say an hour ago, not terrible. Granted, these things do change, as they tend to do.
Do we have Joel?
Good morning, Chief.
Hey, Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. What's going on in the Windy City?
Well, nothing except I seem to recall I'm going to try and dig out some old shows and how you were so happy to get Juwan Howard. What happened there?
5 years ago, Chief. Five years ago.
What happened?
I don't know how much time you want to spend on this. He took over a talented program from John Beilein, right? And had some very good players from his era. Recruited a lot of players that went to the NBA. He probably lost, a half a dozen players over the last 2 years. Number three, he wasn't a very good coach. Lost a lot of close games down the stretch. Another thing to look at is he had some heart problems to start the year. Definitely his physical, you never want to underestimate, the importance of your health. I mean, he was fired. He didn't resign, but that's probably for contractual reasons. So back to being a football school, Chief. I'll tell you, one thing really turned, you're watching sporting events or you're watching certain things happen, and then there's like a moment where you go, wow, that's just not right. There's something wrong. And when, do you remember 2 years ago when Michigan lost a game to Wisconsin and he slapped one of the assistant coaches open-handed? Do you remember that?
On the other team, yeah.
Yeah, and I looked at my wife then and I said, he's gone. I mean, you just, in professional sports, it was like a Woody Hayes moment.
Yeah.
And, you're probably too young to remember Woody Hayes, but...
I remember.
Charlie Bauman intercepted a pass in the 1979 Gator Bowl. He was running by Woody Hayes. He got tackled out of bounds, and Woody slugged him. And Woody was immediately dismissed, so... He used the excuse that he was charged, and hey, I'm from Chicago, and I'm protecting myself. So, a confluence of different things. I did call the hire Dusty May, FAU, rebuild the program. But, when you win the national championship, when you go undefeated in football, when you probably have one of the best college football teams of all time, you don't care about his basketball as much. We'll keep my season tickets at least one more year.
What we don't want to dig into this too much because we're going to talk about this market a little bit. What do you, in 30 words or less, it's almost want to sound really so stupid. It always reminds me when Digger Phelps, he never really could figure the 3-point line in his play. Now, granted, I'm not exactly all that positive on the 3-point line, but the fact is, some of these guys, I just don't think that they're ready to use this portal thing. I mean, was it Utah State last weekend? The guy had, there was nobody on the team that scored a point last year. That every single person came through the portal, or I guess maybe there's a couple of freshmen, but I mean, some coaches, programs really seem to be into this new world, and other coaches are like, I don't want any part of it.
I mean, each school is, a different case now. The backers of Juwan Howard would say that there were two players in the portal. Number one, the Pac-10 Player of the Year, Caleb Love. He was denied admission to the University of Michigan. Number two, Terrence Shannon, who transferred from Georgia Tech and is one heck of a player at Illinois, he was denied admission to the University of Michigan. So, for whatever standards, the admissions department, played a role in this, but I think it goes a lot deeper than that. The guys that he brought in from the portal did not really perform, and I think also, what you're seeing, and you don't have a better example of it than John Calipari, bringing in these young players. I mean, look like a little old Oakland University just down the street from me, program coach for 40 years, bringing in players. He did have that one guy was a transfer, but older players, and I think that's what you're going to see. Purdue, who I have picked gold away, has older players. I think you can have these superstar freshmen and everything, but I think when it comes down to it, having experience plays. So the portal, one and done's, professional sports, NIL, college becoming more professional. A lot of changes going on in college athletics.
Well, what about changes? What about this market? If we seem like this is me saying it, you can disagree for sure. Our central bank isn't pouring as much money in as they were, but they're letting China and Japan and other places do it for them, and it seems like we got the same result.
If you put a textbook, when you have a stock market at all-time highs, rampant speculation, and you have a Fed saying they're going to cut interest rates three times in a year where, you still have inflation, and supposedly we'll find some more out on Friday. You have a accommodative Fed here in a rising market. It's a very unusual circumstance. I will just alert your investors. I mean, Friday, I don't know why they're doing it, but you know what Friday is. Friday's Good Friday,
yep,
right? The markets are closed. And that's where we're going to get the PCE, personal income spending, Friday morning at 8:30. Retail wholesale inventories will be out too. Powell's even speaking on that day at 11 o'clock. And I did do some research. I don't think the futures are going to be open at all. I mean, remember one time they were open to react to the number. A big day for data and no market action. So fasten your seatbelts for Sunday night, Chief.
I'm gonna say that the federal government is doing their best to force the exchanges to get rid of Good Friday as a holiday. And I don't know what the cause of that is, but there seems to be a theme there in my conspiratorial mind.
Well, they seem to be. I mean, this is the government releasing the data.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But didn't they have the? Didn't we have a few years ago? Didn't we have a jobs report on Good Friday?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff. Thanks much, but who do you like in the NCAA?
I got Purdue. I got Purdue in a majority of my brackets. I went chalk with Purdue. I like Zach Edey. I just like the experience on the team. I like Mac Painter, so I went kind of homerish. Purdue, I got Purdue going across the board here.
I was lukewarm on those guys during the year, but it seems like they've really buttoned themselves up. Some of the other players are playing a hell of a lot better, and I think the coach is doing a real nice job.
I agree. All right, go Blue Chief.
Take care of yourself.
See you next week.
SP Futures up 19, NASDAQ Futures up 93. We still don't have Carl. Maybe we have Kevin back. Kevin, are you around?
Had to unmute. Yeah, I'm still here.
Don't unmute thyself.
Unmute. Yeah, it hurts a little when you first do it. But
yeah, it hurts a little. What do you make of who's left in the NCAA? I kind of odd, Kevin. It sure seems like, well, this is not just this year. In the first round, everybody's sort of tentative. You can get a lot of upsets, but once the better teams seem to get their legs under them, you don't see too many upsets necessarily in the second round. But
you don't see as many. You still see a few as it presses on. So, for instance, Joel mentioned Dusty May from Florida Atlantic. They were in the Final Four a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So it does happen. I guess you just have to wait and see.
Well, what do you make of the – was it Utah State where the guy said we're not one of the guys was on the team last year? And they went to the second game.
I don't remember which team that was. But, yeah, you saw that with Notre Dame. Two guys basically returning. One of them who sat out for a redshirt year last year and the other one who hardly ever played. That's what happens now when coaches leave. Stepping back and just looking at college basketball, you have a convergence of things. Obviously, the whole name, image, likeness thing is significant. I think it's more significant in football, it seems, than it is in basketball. But that doesn't mean it's trivial in basketball. It's a factor. But at the same time, two other things have happened. One is they relaxed the transfer rules. It used to be you had to sit out a year. And then they said, well, we'll give you a one-time shot at transferring without having to sit out. And then when they started enforcing that for people doing their second transfer, and people transfer when coaches leave. So, I mean, that's kind of always been true, is that people decide, well, I wanted to play for Coach X, and Coach X is gone. So I'm going to go find my second choice coach from back when I was recruited and play for him. But then there's an injunction now that has stopped the NCAA from enforcing that sit-out year on your second transfer while that's being litigated, because basically the lawsuit that was filed said they're preventing people from essentially making a living now that they have this name, image, and likeness payment stuff. So, it's really, where do you want to play this year? It's like the softball season, Tom. I don't want to play for you guys anymore. I'm going to go play for a better team or a better situation for me. This all has kind of happened all at the same time, and it does put a lot of chaos in place.
I'm going to show my age here before.
School, not your coach, but that's gone way by the wayside.
Well, I'm going to show my age here a little bit. Is back when you had a phone in your room, when everybody had their own phone. The idea, somewhere along the line, I think people get a chance to make I'm talking about the NCAA now. With the name, image, and likeness, and you have something allegedly to sell, your basketball ability, your volleyball ability, whatever it is, the NCAA is still a collection of schools. If we want to go totally to the European model, go. Be a soccer player, never come near a university, get signed by, Real Madrid's junior team, get paid, maybe you go to high school, maybe you don't, maybe you're a dummy, maybe you're not, whatever it is. Somehow here we got locked into this, schools are the place to be. Well, if you're a school, the last thing you want is 4 years of constant recruiting of a guy who's supposed to be a student, a guy or girl. If you were the roommates, you don't want the phone ringing all friggin' day with scouts calling this guy from every school in the country. It is divisive to any kind of the fact that you're supposed to be a student. Now, in today's world, hey, these guys aren't really students or basketball. Okay, that's fine. But if you're going to go that way, I don't want you at Notre Dame. I don't want you at Northwestern. I don't want you anywhere else. Go do it. Go to the place in Atlanta or wherever it is and just go play basketball or football. Knock yourself out. But the idea that now the courts are going to tell the NCAA, your guys are in play every second of the day or night and getting calls in class and crap, I don't think they can push the schools around like that, Kevin, or maybe the schools want to get pushed around that. I don't know.
Well, the schools, I'm sure there is a really strong element that doesn't like it, like what's happening. But by the same token, they like the money flow, the cash flow for it. And so, you know, everybody's hooked on it. Nobody wants to be the first to bail out on it. And that's, you know, that's just where you are right now.
Well, I just, the issue with that is, and
you're right about the model, but of course, you know, the big thing is what fills a stadium? What fills a stadium for minor league sports? You know, the answer in general is not much. You know, you have some very popular, like, minor league baseball franchises and so on. But even here, you know, where I live and where the South Bend Cubs are very popular, they don't fill the joint.
They're not on TV, or maybe they are on Marquee or something. But
yeah, and well, they actually do show up on Marquee sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, who watches it? Nobody.
Yeah, but yeah, it's, you know, you might look in and say, oh, I hear they have a hot prospect down there, so I'll look in for a minute. But nobody, you know, there is a hardcore of fans here. There, you know, there absolutely is that. But you're not going to fill it up. Well, you know, when it's affinity for the school, then all of a sudden you have another tie, and that's what. And whether it's an affinity for my alma mater or an affinity for State U, whatever it is, we've built that affinity around the athletic programs, and it does a lot for interest, for attendance, for revenue in general, for merchandising and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, but it also,
so the model's not. And what I'm saying is, you know, if you went back and said, how are we going to do this, and you're going to start all over, yeah, it would be different. But it's not, and it's entrenched, and entrenched, you know, organization structures, bureaucracies, etc., don't give way very easily. They do give way eventually, but they don't give
way.
Well,
I mean, where do you go from here? And again, this is not shades of, you know, Andy of Mayberry, but, I mean, when I was there and you were there, you know, Dave Casper was in all my classes. So was Ian. And the hockey players lived in our dorm. Every night I'm playing bridge and the hockey players. And in the spring I played golf with Ian every day. Those guys, they were my buddies. So that was my affinity. Well, now if every time I tried to play golf with Ian, there's 15 idiots running up to us on the golf course trying to get him to transfer schools or something. And it, you know, I don't know that that's the model I would want to be playing golf with a guy with. I mean, you got to be careful where you're going when you're already on your way and you don't have a destination. I mean, you're right, but at some point, we already have guys in our group. I mean, my brother feels the same way. I don't care about Notre Dame football anymore. It's not Notre Dame football. You know, he might be a little extreme on that, but I don't think he's alone. I mean, you got to be careful what you wreck along the way. Just saying. I mean,
yes. Oh, I'm with you on that, Tom. I think that's absolutely true. And you know, it's a step by step, and that's why I said that, you know, the entrenched power structures and bureaucracies don't give way easily, but they do give way eventually, because step by step you undercut it. And we may be in that mode, and the question is, how far down that road are we?
Well, I also think that with a lot of people, let's put it this way. The world is full of a lot of talented people and whatever it is they do, and when they walk out of their area, they're kind of dummies, and I'm sure, you know, I am too, if you started asking me about surgery or something. Why would you do that? I don't know. But
we have dummy conversations between the two of us all the time.
But I'm saying,
the other of us doesn't know what we're talking
but,
about.
But at least when it comes to, I've had conversations in the last 2 weeks with people I can remember. Or whatever it is we're talking about, and people, and then all of a sudden everybody has their opinion, which is fine. That's what makes conversation. But when people like actually make a statement, okay, oh, wait a minute, you don't know that, and neither do I. You know, we can have our opinion about it, but when you make a definitive statement, you don't know that. And what do you mean? I don't know. The fact is, we don't have the numbers, we don't have the calculator, we don't have our pencil in front of us. We really don't know. We're taking a bunch of other idiots' word for it, or we're taking the news word for it. Well, what do you mean? Everybody don't know. Nobody doesn't know it because we don't. We have not gone through. I'm gonna bet you, Kevin, that if some of these schools that are to get, you know, People love the place. I mean, the Texas A&M, the Notre Dames of the world, the Ohio States. I'm gonna bet you that once you drop below those numbers, especially when you start talking about how many people got to be screening the portal every day and how many, what's going on, you could probably make a serious case that the Illinois football program, the Indiana football program, I'm going to say if you gave me every single number and I went through it, I'm not so sure it's profitable. I mean, with the Big Ten, you know, with the Big Ten, what do you call it, TV contract, probably is, but it's nowhere near, I don't think, what people think it is.
Well, look at it this way. It's been a little while since Notre Dame did stadium expansion, and part of their justification was putting a lot of student space around the stadium, tied to the project. But they dropped $400 million into the football stadium.
Yeah.
And that place is not stupid with money. They're a money-making machine. So there must be some profitability in there somewhere. Do people make bad investments? Of course, but you know, I'm kind of thinking that there is that it's the other way. That there's a lot more that they don't report.
I think for some schools, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But I'm when you and Bob went down years ago to Florida State and were able to get season tickets for next to nothing. I'm not so sure once you get below the top 15 or 20 that it's there. I don't know that Iowa State makes money. I don't know if, you know what I'm saying is, I don't know if Colorado State makes money. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm saying
I don't know if they do either. I tend to think that the the other way I look at it though is their payroll costs are so low. Now there is a movement to just scrap this whole NIL model as it is, and because now coaches are finding out how much they hate dealing with it and dealing with all these alumni who are contributing to collectives and all of that. And so there's this movement among coaches to say, oh, hell, just make them employees. Then we can have them sign multi-year contracts. Then we can, there's all kinds of things that they can do with that. So, it's morphing step by step. It's marching its way towards looking like the like the mini NFL.
I don't think that's going to, how can I put it? I'm all over the black here today, but I'm not really. If you go down that road, Kevin, it's not going to be that, because you're gonna charge somebody. What do you figure the cost is to recruit Ryan? By the time you take the private jet out to his place and bring him in and all this other crap, I'm going to say $100,000, $75,000 to recruit the guy if he's coming in on private jets and stuff. Or his first year is worth 80. If he leaves after year two and he hasn't really played as a freshman, but he's doing good in practice and everybody thinks he's good and all of a sudden he's out of there, you're going to see a contract that says Ryan better give you some of that money back.
Or you're going to see a contract that is just like an NFL contract that says you're under contract for 3 years, you can't go play for something.
Well, that's right. Well, I mean, be careful what you wish for is what was, I guess, the theme of this conversation.
No, that's what I'm saying. And I think the coaches, the coaches are seeing that and saying, yeah, I need to lock these guys up for multi-year deals. So let's go ahead and make them employees. I think that's where it's going next.
But even the coaches, when you and I, not when you and I were there, afterwards, you should know this, all this stuff. There was a period of time, and not that long ago, of course, not that long ago to you or me is different than Ryan, but I'm going to say 10, 15 years, where assistant coaches, wasn't their maximum they could make 60? And they could not participate in any of the shoe contracts, only the head coach could?
I don't remember how that worked. I do know that it wasn't true, because it wasn't practical, because, let's put it this way. It's not that it wasn't true. I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, they didn't make a lot of money.
Well, okay, so my point is now fast forward.
Whatever it was, the compensation wasn't there until people started figuring out, well, maybe I got to pay my coordinators, and then once you start paying the coordinators want the best staff they can get. So yes, it starts, sort of again cascading through the system.
Well, I mean, I think the amount of revenue at Texas, at Actually, Texas makes more money than any other school, right? Or, of course, they don't count the... I don't know if they count the money you got to pay to get the tickets that are allegedly...
Don't ever pay any attention to these articles right. that you see about who makes the most
okay,
money.
What I'm saying is if you look at the...
I know what their source is, and that's why I say that.
Okay, but when you look at the explosion of revenue, you know, with the, between the TV and the stadium or $100 a ticket or something like that, you look at the explosion, and you're right, it's incredible. But if you look at the explosion of costs, what do you suppose the football budget is at one of these places that are, that pay up for these coaches, not to mention what they're on the hook for? Somebody told me last night over an adult beverage that the guy at Kentucky, his buyout's at $39 million. If they want to get rid of him, the basketball coach?
Oh, I thought it was 33, but yeah, it's in the
39, 33. What's the difference? I mean,
it's a huge number.
But I bet if you were to put the how many people are around now just watching the portal all day, what do you suppose in terms of where are we 2024 versus 2000, what do you suppose the football budget is at Notre Dame? Is it up 10 times? 8 times? I mean, revenues have gone up huge, but
it's huge, and I don't even know. I don't even trust the sources that are available for that. Now, you can get good budget numbers or reasonable budget numbers out of the state schools, so that's a possibility to actually get to find out what's going on. But you're not going to get it out of a private school like Notre Dame.
No, I don't. You know, they don't even. One of our buddies, I could put the name out there, was on the board for a while. They've got like two boards, you know. There's the board where everybody gets on, so they want to get your money.
Yeah, there's the board of trustees and there's the board of fellows.
Well, and
the power is in the board of fellows.
Yeah, there's the like Harvard's the same way. They've got this big board where they get all these people on there for politically correctness and everything.
Political correctness and donations.
Yeah, and then there's the other people that actually... I don't think the people on the first board even know the full budget, where it goes.
Yeah, well, they probably get a budget summary report. So,
yeah, but they don't get the line-by-line stuff.
Here's my point. I want to go back to when I say the source, because listeners can learn something from this. Is almost every time you see one of these magazine or news articles, online articles about the finances... They're getting their data from the government's Title IX reporting website. And that is where you have to, each school has to go in and report. Well, Title IX is all about the expenses. It is not about the revenue. So they have to put some kind of accurate depiction of the expenses involved in each of their programs so that you can compare men's and women's expenditures. That's fine to a point, but then they also give the schools the opportunity to put their revenue numbers in. And some schools take that seriously and they put in the actual revenues, but you will see a whole lot of programs where when they say fill in the revenue blank, they put to the exact dollar the same amount as the expenses. And if you go in and look like at all the basketball programs in the ACC, and you find out that of the 15, 16 schools, however many they have there, that 10 of them have the exact revenue to the dollar that equals their expenses, that is not possible. So there is just no statistical probability for that. That tells you they're just plugging the numbers. So that's why you can't rely on this. Now, you can't really even rely on the expenses because a whole lot of those expenses are off book. So, if for instance, a media contract for radio rights and the like, because all of these schools have radio networks for their sports. Well, it may be driven by their football team, but they don't drop the media rights into a football bucket because part of that is for basketball, and part of that is for maybe women's basketball, men's basketball, hockey, whatever else, all their other sports, and so it's not attributed. Coaches get paid off book, so they'll have the coaches' salaries in there, but coaches get paid off book for their weekly coaches' shows, for some of the...
And they can be part of the contract that they will get, and the shoe contracts can be too, right?
Yeah, it can be part of the coach's contract with the school. It could just as well not be part of the coach's contract.
Well, I thought when we got a dash here to...
So what I'm saying is don't ever read past the first paragraph of any of those articles.
Right, do we have Professor Hal?
Hey, Hal.
Is he there?
I'm here.
There, and Carl is here, too. So
wow, we had Carl, too. We woke Carl up.
Well, I'm going to go away.
All right. Kevin, real quick, before you dash, when they hired Digger or somebody way back in the day, wasn't part of the deal that he got his weekly deal on WNDU or whatever it was? It was part of the contract?
It probably was, yeah. Or, you know, now they're all on syndication, so.
Well, yeah, all right, Kevin, thank you.
And that's all I'm telling you, is those numbers are a load of crap.
All right, well, thank you very much. Professor, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
I have two questions for you. Were you driving that ship that ran into the bridge in Baltimore? The ship that ran into the bridge in Baltimore and collapsed it, and all these people were in the water that were driving across it?
No, that wasn't me, no.
That's this morning. We're talking about starting your day.
Wow. Yeah. I just barely got my coffee, so.
Yeah. I wanted to, at some point here, we can start wherever you want. I'm glad to see Carl is with us, even though we'll catch him on. Actually, we won't catch him on Friday because Friday's Good Friday. We'll have to get him on before Friday somehow because we need our Carl fix. One of my buddies, he's coming back on hopefully. Our buddy Eric, who's a professor over at Columbia College, evidently they're in a world of hurt over there in terms of budgets. And are looking to file some kind of emergency deal where they can redo everybody's contracts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Are a lot of these smaller schools in that same spot, or are they unique?
Well, I think they are because I think I don't know why, but being on a college campus, I imagine myself being a young man on a college campus today. When I do my Title IX training as a faculty member, I think students take the same kind of training. I just being honest with myself and the audience, if I were on a college campus today and I went through a lot of the orientation, I don't know if I'd stick around too long. And I definitely would not be interested in dating anybody on campus.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think I'd be going to the dance club, or I'd be hanging out at a church to get my dates. I would not be looking for dates on a college campus.
You know what they say about those girls you find in church?
Yeah. Well, the bishop's daughter was always the most experimenting, let's just say.
Yeah. She had a zest for living, as they said in...
zest for living. I don't think I would want to be on a college campus today if I was a young man. And you look at enrollment numbers, and male enrollments are way down. And I think males, I'm not saying all, but I'm saying males on average probably tend to be more conservative than females do, just in general. From the limited interactions I get with the handful of students that take my classes, that might be a result of, you know, my students being economics majors or business majors, and economics majors and business majors tend to be more libertarian or conservative relative to students in other parts of the campus. So to me, you got male enrollment down. And on top of that, you know, I think a lot of companies are now, you know, like saying, We just need to hire somebody with, you know, skills and who is trainable, and we don't necessarily need a college degree. And there's a lot of college degrees out there. I mean, if you're in that major, great. I mean, that's your thing, fine. But a lot of these majors, there's really no market for them in the private sector, right? So you have this explosion in majors where there's really no market for the skills that are being learned in those majors, right? I mean, you get skills in accounting, you get skills in finance, you get skills in economics. I'm biased. I think economics is the best major because it teaches you how to think. It teaches you how to critically think and look at the world through, you know, data and theory. It doesn't teach you what to think, and it doesn't really teach you how to do it. Accounting, it teaches you how to do something, right? With the economics, you're taught how to think critically. And that's why I think economics is so powerful. And that's the major I'd recommend people who are interested in history, people who who are interested in business, in the law. Because I think you learn a lot of cool skills like, you know, reasoning and logic. I mean, you have to go from point A to point D. And most politicians can only go to point A, right? But yeah, there's this trend where men are no longer interested in college. The male-female ratio is widening. And then on top of that, people are having fewer and fewer kids. The Northeast, it's a really big problem. I think there's just a smaller and smaller pool of people interested in, well, one, in high school, and two, the people who are in high school up here, and it's falling. The ones that are interested in college is declining. And I find this interesting, too. We've been talking about this for maybe a year or so. The divergence in the employer survey and the payroll survey, you know, that divergence. And we've been hypothesizing that it's because people are working multiple jobs.
Well, we're not hypothesizing. Yeah.
We see it, right?
Well, let's put it this way. It in my opinion, it's the only way they both can be correct.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's not my necessary. Let's put it this way. Well, I just said that twice. I had a conversation with this real nice guy. I met Eric, the guy who was on the show. I met him for a long first time since COVID, for God's sake. I met him the other night, and we had a great time. And one of his buddies, and kind of a buddy of mine from the neighborhood, comes in. He's this extremely liberal retired attorney. He's one of these guys where instead of looking at a number from the government and saying it doesn't match, he immediately assumes that it's correct and these people are legit, and it's up to me to prove it otherwise. And I was having all kinds of trouble explaining to him. Guy's name's Luke, nice guy. And again, I like to love them on the show because he really knows his stuff. I said, look, I'm telling you, these are two numbers coming from your government, and they don't match. And what I'm trying to say is, the only way they could both be true, since they count different things, one counts multiple jobs and one doesn't, the only way they could be true over the last year, with the 2.5 million people, one has 500,000 people being hired, the other has 3 million, the only way they could possibly be true is 2.5 million people have ducked into second or third job. You know, he's like, oh, you don't know that. The government. Okay. Then one of them's a lie. I'm looking for the explanation that where they're not lying to us. And well, I don't think that's bad on my part.
According to Owl Labs, they did a recent survey, and they found that 46% of workers are polyworking. And that means they have a side hustle or some other additional job, and they're full-time. 46% of workers are polyworking.
Well, that's
multiple jobs.
That's
right?
The single biggest reason, well, in one of the surveys I saw, single biggest reason why people don't want to come back from work, to work from home.
That was their point, too, right? They didn't want to, exactly.
Well, the other part of it, and I think is legit, is if somebody from, well, I can make it, there's an exception to everything, right? If somebody went home, work from home from PTI, and we don't have anybody like this, but essentially 4 years ago, which was COVID, right? It was the fourth anniversary of the shutdown was last week, St. Patrick's Day, correct? If somebody went home and they're making, you know, 70 grand a year, and in the 4 years they were able to not have the second car, they go to the train and do this and not have the wardrobe you need to come to work, although people don't dress as nice as they used to, including me. But when you say, okay, Judy or Jim, you got to come back to work, you probably need a 20% raise to make it even.
Definitely.
Because your parking rates are up, the car rates are up, insurance rates are up, all that stuff.
Clothes cost more.
Yeah. So everything is, but nobody's doing that part necessarily. But by and large, though, people have, the girl upstairs, she just moved, she used to feed 3 or 4 cats during the day. You know, $20 or $15 a cat. While she was working full time for the state, you know, okay, everybody's got their little shtick going. I mean, or you're selling two things on eBay or Etsy or something. I mean, I'm not saying everybody's doing it, but a lot of people are.
I mean, you know, my mother-in-law's tenant. I go over there and I fix the sink. I fix plumbing leaks, whatnot, right? And you walk into his apartment, and he has these shelves that he bought from Home Depot. And on those shelves, he has stacks and stacks and stacks of, like, these designer shoes. You know, these limited run shoes.
Yep.
That's his side hustle.
Well, you know, I mean, but, you know, but you also have, and we had Audrey on this week talking about real estate, but last week we had Nancy on, and Nancy does mortgages for people, and, you know, she never speaks out of school, but she would say, I mean, these people are, we're on to the point where you have 2.5 jobs per family, where somebody, the guy or the lady is an accountant, the other person, you know, whatever, does something else, and, oh, by the way, the accountant's doing taxes during the first 4 months of the year as well as their job, so they're really working.
Yeah.
There's 2.5 jobs, and everybody who buys a house now, it has to be move-in condition because every nickel is going towards the mortgage and insurance and everything. There's no room for, well, you bought this place, you knew the air conditioner was no good, and the first month it conks out and you owe $5,000. Nobody's got the $5,000.
Yeah.
And so it's, a lot of this is, you know, wherever you are, you sort of are. But yeah, the universities, I mean, there's somewhat of this waging war against maleness. I don't know where that came from. And you hear it just in kind of normal conversation. I mean, before COVID, the Buckingham Bar used to be open up in my club, the club I belong to. It's not really a club anymore because there's no bar, there's no this, but they still have a pool and a workout facility. The guy says to me, you know, I'm retired. My wife or my daughter got divorced. Blah blah blah. The guy doesn't take care of the kids like he ought to. So 2 days a week, I watch him. And I go, okay, Alfie, you know, it's really kind of weird. We go to the playground, and there's other mothers, and there's, you know, people that are watching the kids and so forth, and then there's me. He said, all of a sudden, there's snow out there, and all of a sudden, the boys get in a snowball fight, and he goes, everybody's in an outrage. These kids are, you know, they need to be, like, drugged. They're acting crazy. I go, they're just being 6-year-old boys. What are they talking about? I mean, there's this, like, you know, war on whatever. I don't know what it is. He goes, you know, this is crazy. This is normal behavior. That's what you're supposed to do at recess. You're supposed to run out and run around and wrestle a little bit. That's when you go back into class, you get it all burned off. He goes, don't these people get that? You know, you don't want people throwing stones at each other. He said, but that's not what's happening.
Yeah, and it's pretty bad. I remember reading an article, I think it was before the pandemic, about a young man who was a football player at a Colorado State. I don't think it was the Colorado State. It was one of the branch campuses that plays football. And he had consensual sex with his girlfriend. He was black, and she was white. And the roommate reported it as a sexual rape or something on campus. And they believed, the girlfriend said no, it was consensual. And the boys said it was consensual. But the school went with the roommate. And I think they kicked him out of school. And that's the kind of thing that young men are faced with. And so when you have policies that side with a roommate, you know, it has a tendency to dampen enrollment, I think, right?
Well, I mean, one of the most complex things in human nature, boy, I sure as hell don't want to go into it. The mating game among young people is essentially, even if you're nice, which most people are, I think.
I think most people are.
Yeah. It's a incredible exercise in trial and error.
I think most New Yorkers are nice, but they're miserable.
Well, but I'm saying it's an incredible study in trial and error. You think somebody's attracted to you, or they're attracted to you, or they're not. Signals, that's how you learn it. But it's a very complex game.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like Lou says, a lot of, you know, harassment is not what was said, but who said it.
Yeah.
You know, if it was a joke from somebody you like, it's a joke. If not, it's a harassment. You know, it's,
yeah.
And you know, and some people are not so good at getting vibes from other people. I don't know if I'd ever want to walk into the middle of that on a date on a weekend and a couple of cocktails and somebody went to somebody's place and then this was, is anybody pregnant? Is anybody hurt? You know what, guys, knock it up to a learning experience unless it really was violent. I mean, how does somebody get in the middle of that when you weren't even there?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine a worse job.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. You guys went home. Nobody was there. You had a few cocktails, and somebody had some sex, and, well, both of you had some sex, one would think. and all of a sudden the next day you're pissed off about it, or you didn't like the person or whatever. Get over it. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, it's done, right?
Yeah.
Is anybody hurt? Nope. Is anybody pregnant? Nope. I mean, what do you want me to do? You know, I don't want to get in there on Stocks and Jacks, but when you start doing stuff like this, why do people want to get into the middle of this unless there was violence or there was something?
Yeah.
You're right.
If I was a freshman at a college, I would not date anybody on campus. Nobody. I would just go to my classes, do my homework, and then I'd go hang out somewhere else. Seriously. I just wouldn't do it.
Well, I think what happened, to get back to the Columbia College thing,
yeah,
these guys have been a beacon for anybody who's in any kind of the arts, any kind of entertainment. If you want to be a voiceover guy, if you want to know animation, if you want to know how to produce stuff, it's a spectacular place. Now, a lot of that
is
stuff...
Is it in Missouri?
No, it's right here in Chicago.
Oh, Columbia College. There's a lot of different Columbia Colleges.
Oh, yeah. But now all of a sudden that industry was kind of decimated during COVID. So it doesn't surprise me. I honestly believe from a guy who thought college was actually spectacular. I think no matter what it is, you need to have somewhat of a core thing that I'm not saying they don't, but you need to come out of Columbia with some finance degree. There needs to be an economic course there or two. There needs to be, obviously there is writing, because that's what Eric teaches, creative writing. But he tells me he has to spend the first 4 weeks of the semester telling people how to punctuate now, because they don't learn that in high school.
Yeah.
Because they can't.
I've experienced that too.
Yeah. But somewhere these core things, like you're saying, I hear people here in government talking on a stump speech where people say whatever they damn well please, but on serious radio shows you're sitting somebody down, and their knowledge of like economics and things, the numbers just don't add up. They can't add in their head. It's not that they're dumb. They're not dumb because they obviously got that job. They must have a skill set of some kind, but they just there was the thing with this thing that I think that lost in Chicago, this so-called mansion tax, where they were raising the rates on, they were lowering them a little bit on the low end, but raising them like a real lot on the upper end in terms of when a transfer tax when you sell a property. And they're talking about helping the homeless. And the guy who knew some economics said, if you're going to try and keep the cost of housing down, the last thing you do is increase taxes on housing.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes, you don't go there. And the lady, who was very well-meaning, very well-spoken, she's like, oh, no, we need this money so, we can help these people. And you wonder, what is the motivation? Isn't the motivation the idea that all these people who are currently homeless and whatever, or migrants, or to somehow get the education and the training to where one of these days they're paying their own rent, they're buying their own food, they're buying their own car. You don't even have to worry about them, whether or not they're paying their taxes. Isn't that the goal, or is the goal now different? Is the goal now to have this permanent sort of underclass that's dependent upon government and they forcing them to vote for you or something because you give them more than the next person? I mean, where are we going with this? I mean, my world is, I want everybody to afford all their own stuff so I never hear from them. I mean, isn't that the idea, where people can afford their own kids' education, their own hospitals? Isn't that the goal, or isn't it? Or maybe I'm totally wrong here. Am I that far afield?
Well, I think most people are probably, that support this property tax program that's going to help the homeless. I think most people look at that and go, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I want to support it, but I think the politicians know that it's not going to work. They have a team of economists that have to be telling them, look, you're going to increase the price of, housing. So I think they have a team of economists, but it's such an easy sell, right? Populism is popular because it's an easy sell, right? Trump's populism sells easily to, blue collar.
Yeah, everybody's stealing money from you, and I'm gonna stop them.
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, and everybody else a crook, and everybody else is whatever. Yeah. And these people are, and you know what? And to a large extent, he's right. I mean, when Hitler gave a speech, and I'm not comparing the two. The whole trick of having a Hitler-esque speech is for 90% of it to be correct, and then the conclusion you can lead people wherever you want, right?
Yeah. I think the policies are sold. They're easily sellable, right? I mean, libertarian policies are hard to sell. Austrian economics is hard to sell, right? But Keynesianism is easy to sell. If you're a Republican, you just give people tax cuts. If you're a Democrat, you spend some more money, right? Those are easy sells. People see that, and it's an easy sell. But those policies have consequences. And I think the problem with homelessness is multifaceted. I think, one, you have a monopoly, for the most part, in the public school system. And when you have a monopoly, you don't have to be accountable to the customers.
You've never seen, you need to spend, not that you want to, 6 months or a year in Chicago. You've never seen a domination of an area that the Chicago Teachers Union has over the city right now.
Yeah. But you got two monopolies involved there. You got the union, which is a monopoly, and then you got the public school system itself, which is a monopoly. So you have the sellers of teacher services, right? And a monopoly seller is a monopsonist. And then you got the monopoly, which is the school system, right? There's a product. So you got the suppliers of a good, teaching services, and then you got the sellers of a product, the schools. So you got double layer monopoly there. And the kids who are in the bottom 50% of the income distribution, they have to go to these schools, and the schools know it. And so you have these kids who are not getting very good education. So when they graduate, their skill sets are not very valuable. And then on top of that, you have minimum wage laws. I would suspect that Chicago has a bunch of living wage laws like Baltimore City.
I'm not sure they're any higher than the state or the Fed, though.
Okay. So, but you still
maybe a little bit. Yeah, they are a little bit. They are a little bit.
Yeah. They have a minimum wage law, which means if you're a kid that just graduated from a public school and you can barely read and barely do math, that means your skill set's not going to be equal to whatever the state says the minimum wage is. So you're unemployable. And what do you do? Well, maybe you need a job, and you find an employer. An employer that would hire you is maybe a guy who produces illegal drugs, right? So you get a job, either making illegal drugs, selling drugs, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's illegal, and then that makes you a criminal, right? So now you got this criminal record. Maybe you're in and out of prison, and the government never says, "Hey, you did your time in jail. We're gonna expunge your record." No, they leave that stamp on your forehead for the rest of your life, right? And then on top of that, you have the Fed creating inflation, right? And causes home prices to go up. And the wealthy people love that, right? Because their rents are going up that they collect on their commercial properties or their residential properties. Their property values are appreciating. And the local government loves that, too, because they can collect taxes, higher taxes with this inflation.
Milton Friedman once said, I still remember the guy, like, he was around, but because he said the biggest beneficiary of inflation is the government. But
the local governments love the property taxes going up.
Well, right? Not to mention sales tax go up. But here I get the when you talk about the general people not having the education properly. When I say properly, I didn't like statistics course any more than the next guy when I was there, and I'm not so sure it was all that good at it, but.
Tommy, if you took it from me, I think you'd love it because I focus on intuition, not memorization.
I never could figure out the difference between the permutations and the combinations. I don't know, maybe.
Well, yeah, all you got to do is look at the Powerball, right?
But, it's weird, though. People that are good at, like, I'm going to say regular math aren't necessarily so good at statistics. Same way the other way.
Oh, yeah. Well, stats really isn't math.
Yeah.
There's calculation in statistics. But in math, you get the exact answer. In statistics, you get a fuzzy region.
Well, same way at the University of Chicago when I was taking all those high-end integer programming and quadratic programming and stuff. That's not all that intuitive. We're going to head here for a break, but I have one little thing. When we have this issue with the state's attorney's race here, right, where the lady Burke was, the other guy's name, I forget his name, was leading him by, 9,000 votes or something like that, 9 or 10. So she's 51, he's 49. Well, all of a sudden, the election commissioner guy says, "Oops, me bad." Sounds like Ryan. "Me bad. I found 9,000 or 9,500 votes that came in the mail or were in, they were in a drop box, something. I don't know if they're postmarked or not. That's a little fuzzy. The day before the election. So the election's on the 19th. This was on the 18th. So, okay, he comes up with these 9,500 votes. Now, I don't know enough about the system to say, hey, Joe, you're a friggin' crook. But my suspicion is, hey, Joe, you're a friggin' crook. But I don't, you know. But now here the weird part is. I stopped in a big workout last night, stopped in a local bar downstairs and met a few guys afterward who didn't show up for the workout. And I said, you know, this is so weird. And you know, the bartender was really nice. She goes, when you say so weird, what's so weird about it? I said, her name's Katie. She's a terrific lady. And I go, Katie, the part that they found the ballots is not so screwed up. It is Chicago, after all, right? You know, finding ballots. I said, but why isn't there an outrage? You're talking about every other ballot that was cast was damn near 50-50. We're talking about 51-49.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to assume now that they've counted these ballots. They claim 7,500 of them were for the guy and 25 for the lady. So now it's almost
and
even.
And the margin is just perfect to put them over the top.
Yeah,
right?
And I'm like, there's no chance, unless you got one precinct in the richest or the poorest place or something. There's no chance that just 10,000 random ballots would come out 75-25 when the rest of the election is 50.
And the margin puts them over the top.
Yeah, well, it's not quite there. But you know, they're still working on that.
They're going to find more.
Yeah, but
that happens in Seattle all the time with King County.
Well, but I'm saying that anybody who thinks that that's legitimate has never taken even a third grade stats class. No, that when it's 50, you know, it's like saying a baseball team has played 140 games and is 70-70. Well, out of the last 22 for them to catch a team, they got to be 18-4. Well, the statistical chances of that, I mean, it can happen. It has happened in baseball. But the statistical chances of that when you're 500 after 140 is next to nothing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it can happen, you know, but in ballots, I don't know if I believe that at all. S&P futures up 18. S&P is 85. Be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
The hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jazz. I'm Tom Howell, Ryan on the board. I'm stuttering here because S&P is up 15, the S&P is up 70. Is daylight, you don't remember, Ryan, the movie, there's got to be, the Poseidon Adventure, the song was, there's got to be a morning after. You've got to check now that it's daylight. The picture of this ship and this bridge. This is really something. This ship is right in the middle. The bridge looks like they tore it apart with a blowtorch, and there's people in the water. It's really ugh. How can you spell that?
Poseidon or
Poseidon Adventure was a ship that went under.
Okay.
And then people made it to the top, and I think the theme song was "There's Got to Be a Morning After." Well, the first pictures of this were in the dark, and you couldn't really see much. But now the bridge is laying on the container ship. It's unreal.
Answer your question. I did find out how to spell Poseidon. It wasn't terribly off. Poseidon.
The question was, how do you spell ugh?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's close to Poseidon, because that's what I'm looking at right now.
There you go. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 134 now, 0.7%. These guys are heating up a lot more than they were an hour ago. FTSE, which was unchanged, is now up 10, so 0.1%. CAC around up 26.3, so we're getting a little hotter. Over in Asia, well, they're closed. They can't get any hotter. Nikkei down 16 points, call that flat. Hang Seng up 144. 0.9%, 16,618. So looks like the days of being under 16 over there, at least for a while, are gone. Shanghai up 5, 3,031. They're still staying over 3,000, which I think is the goal, at least, maybe even higher. Yesterday, Dow was down 162, S&P down 15, down 16, and now we're up 16. So we're doing the U-turn here so far. NASDAQ was down 44, and we're up 75. So NASDAQ has turned positive on the 2 days of the week so far. Bonds unchanged, 4.25. Bund down 1 basis point, 2.36. Japan unchanged, 0.74. Oil creeping up here, 10 cents, 82.05. So now kind of firmly in the low 80s and not the high 70s. Brent unchanged, 86.75. Natural gas unchanged, 162. 161, actually. Ouch. RBOB unchanged, 274, even though gas was up 30 cents here last weekend. Foreign exchange, Euro 108.5, and the British pound 126.5, so not much going on there. Gold, big move here, up 1830, 2216. We'll see if it stays over 2200. Silver up 4 cents, 29.90, 24.93. And we have Bitcoin up 182, back over 70,000, 71,015. Ryan, real quick, traffic, weather, sports, and then we'll get back to Professor.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Ah, there we go. Now I can hear me too. Wonderful. Right now in Chicago, it's 51 degrees and a little bit rainy, with precipitation likely through later tonight. We're looking at a high of 52 degrees, so not much warmer than it currently is. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's just what we're working with today. Right now,
we got a rain though. We got that going for us.
We do have the rain. Yes. Yeah. Just if you need to cool off any more in this 50 degree weather, now's your chance to get around and do it. Right now in Phoenix, it is currently 57 degrees. Again, we'll still be mostly sunny with a high of 70 there. Updated inbound Kennedy. Wait, where did that go? Ah, here we are. Looking at the Kennedy Expressway right now, we're looking at a stark 37 minutes inbound travel time. For the Edens, it's 42 minutes. Eisenhower coming on in, it's 41 minutes. Dan Ryan being 26 minutes. And 35 minutes coming in on the Stevenson. Did I mention that the Bulls lost, too?
Yes.
Did we cover that? Okay.
To the worst team in basketball.
Yes, the Washington Wizards. Honestly, I forgot they even existed for a while, Tom.
Well, they were the Bullets, but they can't do that anymore.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, even that's... Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can't beat the Bullets anymore.
Yeah, no, that's... there's a lot to unpack with that.
You can sell them. You can sell them, you just can't have them as your name.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that a hoot, to put it correctly.
All right, so are we back... Well, a couple pieces more news here. Cocoa prices, $10,000 per metric ton for the first time ever. And McDonald's is going to sell Krispy Kreme nationwide by the end of 2026. I would never have guessed that.
Ooh. I'm for it, but no, I wouldn't have guessed that.
I'm not a big Krispy Kreme fan, but I'm not a big donut fan.
They're okay.
All right, so do we still have the professor?
Yep, done.
What do you think of cocoa prices? You're buying a wife chocolate, you better go up and get it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, my wife doesn't like chocolate, so I don't have to worry about that too much. She likes caramel.
Well, there you go. What did the one lady in Starship Enterprise and Star Trek say, that men will never understand the bond between women and chocolate?
My wife is just the opposite of every... She's just the opposite. She's like the George, the parallel George. Who George, you know, George messes up his life because he follows his instincts, and then all of a sudden he does the opposite of his instincts. my wife is kind of like the opposite, right? She was the most pleasant person you could ever talk to when she was pregnant and miserable with triplets, laying with her head below her feet in the hospital bed for 2.5 months, right?
Wow.
Just always pleasant, never... The only time she is, like, upset is when I make her upset. So I try not to do that. I try not to do that, but, you know, I'm moody, and I'm cynical, and I'm sarcastic, but...
So you met the partner that can hang with you without shooting you.
Yeah. She, if it wasn't for me, she'd be always in a good mood. And I used to think it was... I used to think it was an act, and I would just kind of, like, drop, like, little, you know, bombs here and there, you know, like, comments just to see how she react. Because I thought it was an act for the longest time, but it's not. She's just a really nice person who's always in a good mood.
Well, you know, my odd story, well, two quick little family stories. My mom was always one of the people, even when she was older, she was... yoga, going to class. She took college classes till she, like the year before she died.
Oh, that's cool.
But she'd go to St. Xavier's and take history or take something. Very disciplined, except for one thing. She kind of liked chocolate and she kind of liked peanuts. If you dropped a box of chocolate covered peanuts in front of her, she couldn't. it was all over. She put on a movie when she was done. The bowl was empty. She was never heavy. Never. But
for me, it's chocolate covered almonds. You drop, if I'm anywhere near chocolate covered almonds, they're gone.
Yeah, that's one thing nice about being in New York. Any decent bar, you always got really good nuts that you can chow down.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't like put my hands in those kind of bowls, man. How many people put their hand in those bowls?
Well, when they fill it up, I eat the whole thing, so I don't worry about anybody else's hands.
Before they fill it up, do you wipe the bowl out?
No. It's, you know. As bad as it is, out of all one things we still have from being animals, from our, you can eat dirt. Your stomach has got about the high, anything that can live in your stomach, with all the acid in there, is a pretty hearty soul. You don't really have to. I read this thing. I used to jog a lot in the lakefront. A lot of times, you know, somebody would see, you know, fleas or bugs all over the place. I read once that the average American ingests 1.5 pounds of insects a year.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, because the government allows it in the food, right?
Well, I mean,
minimum standards for
if you're out running and you know you're gonna just breathe something in.
Yeah.
Anyway, that.
Well, in your food, in your nuts, and your cocoa beans, right? I have a students doing a one mean test in my MBA class. They do this one mean test, and we go out and read the rodent poop standards.
Oh yeah.
Imported products or parts of bugs, you can have up to, like, I don't know, what was it, 10 milligrams per pound of rodent poop in imported cocoa beans?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why when you have corn at the Board of Trade, you deliver it, you inspect it. You drop a whole thing of corn or soybeans on the table and inspect it. It's not like something's not going to crawl out of there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
you know, the funny thing is, the best pizza joint in New York City was John's on Bleecker Street. It had like a 120-year-old coal-fired oven. And they put the pizza in there, and it gets so hot that they have to rotate it because it'll burn the crust. Because the temperature in there is like, I don't know, 800 degrees. And they have to constantly rotate the pizza because the fire is in the center of the oven, right? And they pull it out. And they got closed. And they got closed because there were too many roaches, I guess, in the back. And my thinking is, anything on the pizza that was alive is dead when you put it in 800-degree temperatures.
I would say you're right. Well,
and so it's just extra crunch.
There was, back, you know, I don't know what they did to the roaches, but they don't see too many roaches anymore. But they were, if you know, every bar had them, especially when you, in a lot of ways, the world was better because you recycled all your bottles, right? You filled them all up again. But the bad news is, going back and forth for the cases would pick up roaches. Even if they weren't your roaches, they'd be somebody else's. So if you just brought cases into the bar, you're bringing roaches in with you. So it was really hard. You never wanted to have an apartment above a bar. But now you don't see too many of them. But Al, the market is doing what it's doing. I don't know if the Fed's pouring so much money in anymore. They're not pulling out like they say they're supposed to be. But other governments are kind of doing the dirty work, and it seems, I think there's not much difference worldwide if the Chinese put money in or the Japanese. Chinese have all these debt problems, and it looks like they're trying to deal with it by extra money. Japan has basically said we're going to pump the market up, and they have. You know, and you know, how do you get to the point where you're? What do they own? Something like 30% of the market, or some story over there? They've been buying the ETFs for 10 years now, or 15 years in Japan. So they own a bunch of the market. The government does. Banks own some more of it, because then the government is keeping the banks afloat, or have for a long time. It at some point here, what is even the concept of value? If you know, obviously, if you have a client, like I have a whole bunch of them, you need to be a part of this while it's happening. You need to be somewhat long, but every time it goes up another 5% or 6%, you got to sit there and go. There needs to be somewhat of an end to this at some point, because there always has been. But yet, it hasn't come yet, and I don't know necessarily. We just put some stuff on yesterday where we're a little long in the market, you know, just a little bit. You know, we're protected and so forth, but it seems to me that we have some legs. And when you see an earnings thing come out, and all of a sudden some company, all of a sudden it's worth 15% more. We're blowing through every straddle to the upside, except for Lululemon went to the down. Once in a while, they go to the downside. But the valuations, they're not even, we think they're ridiculously high, and they're going higher. I don't think the governments of the world are going to sit around and go, we need to drag this back. It has to feel just too good everywhere. And finally, somebody who's had the Japanese market for 35 years is ahead on the game. I guess you could still call yourself ahead after 35 years, but I mean, this is a party better than 1999, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, you look at, I tweeted a graph, and it has Lance Roberts' metric for margin debt, and you look at margin debt from 1995 using Lance Roberts' metric, and the S&P 500, and they track almost perfectly.
Every time you have a record margin, you damn near crash.
Yeah.
Now, what's the difference between his and the Fed? I use the one in the Fed. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was using the one from the Fed. I want to ask you, what is his take that's different than the one you get from the Federal Reserve?
Well, in his margin, he includes margin debt, and then he includes like free cash accounts and credit balances.
Okay, so he's getting that stuff from, is that the same thing? He's come out of the New York Fed, now it comes out of some other place, comes out of FINRA now, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure where he got it, but it's in an article that Jennifer Nash wrote for Advisor's Perspective. I just found it fascinating because the S&P 500 just tracks perfectly. I mean, if you calculate the correlation in it, in the two series, it's going to be probably about 0.9, I would suspect, right? The dips match up, the peaks match up. And so how are people getting so much money to put into the stock market in these margin accounts? Well, reserves, you know, they're what, $4 trillion right now, roughly $4 to $5 trillion?
Yep.
They look like they're, you know, bottomed out in a local minimum, and I think they're about ready to rise again. I haven't looked at it in a while. But you have all these reserves in there. People have adjusted their expectations to these now higher interest rates, right? And so from, I think, the end of the rate hiking schedule, when the Fed stopped hiking rates and kind of held them constant, all of a sudden margin debt explodes upward. The S&P follows, right? So reserves are leaking out in the form of margin debt. And so, you know, the billionaire investors, the big hedge funds, they're probably borrowing from, banks, right? And they're using this money. It ends up in the stock market through margin debt. So the Fed is kind of like, it's still inflating, even though interest rates are high.
Hal, you're very clairvoyant, because the major question that I wanted to ask you this week was just that, which is scary. The overall money supply numbers, of course, you can't really tell because they put so much in for the last 4 years that I think it might still be creeping through. So even though the big numbers say they've stopped, I don't know that the effect is over. But again, that's a question for next week. But this week, the real serious monetary policy question for you, if you choose to accept it, Mission Impossible, there's this microcosm that you just brought up of margin debt. And what happens is, I mean, to the listeners, if I go buy IBM at, where is it? IBM's 189. Let's say, just for giggles, it was 150 2 months ago. Now, it wasn't, but if it was, you could have wandered in, or you don't have to wander in anymore. You could have called us up at PTI or Merrill Lynch or anybody. I mean, we don't do a lot of this, but a lot of your online firms, I mean, that's their whole shtick, is people buying stuff on margin, right, basically. You know, we rarely at PTI, we've got debit balances here. We're not a firm that has, people don't normally call us up and say, buy me 1,000 shares of IBM at 150. By the way, here's a check for 75 grand. I mean, once in a while somebody might do that, but very rarely. Doesn't make us bad. It just means that we're not, you know, people look at us as a speculative firm. And all of a sudden now the stock's trading 189. So if I were to look at your account, Professor Snar, let me look at your account. I got this IBM. What can I do? Well, now you have 75 grand plus 39, because you're up 39, right? So now you have, where is that, 114 in equity. So you could take that 39 and go buy another 75,000 worth of IBM or anything else you wanted to. You now have buying power because of the margin. You now have excess margin capacity is the actual term for it. Now, you understand this. I'm going to help the listeners, if they don't, send us an email. You now have excess margin capacity. You can go out and buy more. So we're actually creating wealth, and we're creating money by these things going up. We're creating wealth, and we're creating available credit or margin, whatever you want to call it. So it becomes piggy move up. It's even worse on the commodity side, where the margins are less, and the thing goes up a little bit. You can buy more, right, if you want to. So my question to you is, we're almost increasing the money supply by the fact that the market is moving up, right? Because the margin now becomes more available. I can go buy more IBM or something else. If it goes up to, you know, next week, if it's at 210, I can do it all over again, right? And I can just keep pushing this up. If I want to maintain my 50% and I keep making money, I can keep spending more and more, right? Without ever sending another nickel to IPTI. So is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the real rate of interest for a big time investor, right? You know, you can whatever inflation metric you use, the real rate of interest is probably pretty close to zero for them, right? The interest rate they negotiate.
Yeah. Well, it's a little higher. It actually was. What was the record? Didn't Amazon or those places 2-3 years ago, and Microsoft, didn't they go out and borrow at like 2.3 or 2.5 for 10 years?
So it was negative for them. Their real rate of interest was negative for them. But if you assume the real rate of interest is roughly around zero, right? And nominal assets are appreciating at 5%. A stock is appreciating at 5%. If you use 0% leverage, your nominal return on that investment is 5%. But if you use 99% leverage, you get a 500% return.
Right.
If you use 50%, you get a 10% return. Right.
Except I don't think any firm was ever loaning anybody margin loan at 2.
Yeah.
But even so, I mean, you dovetail.
It doubles. I mean, using reasonable numbers, it can double your return using leverage.
Well, you're wandering. We'll talk about this more next week. Now you're wandering into the Carl territory, that when you have some parts of the conversation, some parts of the population that are able to borrow money at less the inflation rate, you might as well kick yourself in the behind, and how splintered your population is going to become, and those people are going to be so much wealthier than the other people, and that's exactly what's happening.
Well, that's happening.
That's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, you look at cash and checking account balances of the top 1%, and it's it exploded during COVID.
Yeah.
And the Fed stopped publishing the data in late 2022 because it's probably even worse now. I mean, it was going vertical, seriously, from like, I don't know, $400 billion to $1.4 trillion.
Yep.
In like a year and a half, it just exploded.
Well, it's your baseball teams, football teams. Yeah. Those kinds of things are inflating greater than where those people seem to be able to borrow money. Yet, if you and I formed a plumbing company, I'll bet we're paying 8% or 7% for the new van, where those guys are paying 2 or 3. Well, that's, I mean, the Fed, I mean, that's why, as a person, I'm sure I would love to talk to Jay Powell. He's probably a brilliant man. He's probably great sense of humor, a whole bit. But how, I could never get on, that's why they don't want me for the job. I could never get on national TV and tell people how much better they are off they are when the interest rate's going down. I did a quick study. It's probably come down a little bit. And then there's all these gimmick stuff, so I get it. You know, get my credit card and don't pay interest for 2-3 months or 9 months or whatever it is. I actually, during the period 2000 to 2020, when rates went from God knows what, or say 7 down to, zero, right, with the Fed or whatever it was, maybe it was 2020 to 2000, whatever it was, the credit card rates actually went up.
Yeah.
So even though everybody else's rate went down, when I say everybody, the big guy's rate went down, regular America, I mean, Powell, if he wanted to, he would have, he actually cared about rates and people. You know, I'm sure if you ask him, he'd say he does. There's no way that you would have jammed that into the population and not made sure that every rate went down, not just Microsoft's. You know, but he didn't. The Fed didn't. They know full well that their banks, their buddies, are charging 25% on credit cards.
Well, I don't think they have a tool to do that, because they can only change the overnight rate that banks lend amongst themselves, right?
They could say something about it. They could say, we think the states or somebody should have... The federal government is perfectly capable of passing a usury law.
The banking system's a cartel blessed by government, right?
Well, but...
And individual borrowers, small-time borrowers, they have no power.
Well, right? Carl, the states... This is so far in the past. States used to have, and maybe still do, used to have usury laws. Yeah. And our useless Supreme Court said that, oh, no, if the First National Bank of Chicago wanted to charge the dear departed 25% on their credit card, all they had to do is move the credit card division to South Dakota that didn't have such a law. And if you're from South Dakota, you get to charge people in Illinois 25% and not 12. That was a Supreme Court decision.
Now, aren't most banks headquartered in Delaware?
That's now, if you get your credit card, it might have changed a little bit now. Spin back 10 years. Every one of your credit card bills would come to you from South Carolina or South Dakota. So Powell could have said, look what we're doing to the interest rates, and I support a federal usury law of 15% or 20%. I'm not saying 2, but God, you're charging people. So there's people, how many people do you know of, or without even knowing it, have a $3,000 balance on their credit card, paying 25%, and had their money in a savings account in a bank making zero? They're scalping like themselves, for God's sake.
That's probably why, partly explains why 40-50% of workers have a second or third job.
Yeah, I mean, you're scalping yourself.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, duh. So what, the schools you're hanging, I mean, you had the one school that went under, right?
Yeah, Alliance went under, but Mercy, I adjunct for Mercy one class a semester. They're in Dobbs Ferry, but they have a campus in Manhattan. They just got their accreditation reaffirmed by Middle State, so that's good news.
Where the hell is Dobbs Ferry?
It's you take the Hudson River rail line from Grand Central Station in New York. You take it up the Hudson, and it's probably about a 30-minute ride from, you go past Yankee Stadium up the river. It's just up the river about maybe 10 miles north of the city.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty campus.
And then you're also doing stuff down in Carolina, right? And you're doing stuff in Carolina too, right?
Yeah, North Carolina, yeah.
But you drive down there.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think you should go out and get a little twin-engine Piper or something.
Yeah. Where would you park that in New York?
Well, you'd have to... I bet there's general aviation fields near you that you don't even know about.
Oh, yeah, but, driving a motorhome into Manhattan is cost prohibitive.
Well, that's the point. You're flying over it.
that's just not feasible, man. If I was Elon Musk, I would. But
you know, they used to have people here before Rainer Daly wrecked Meigs Field. There were people out in DuPage County that would fly from there to Meigs every morning.
Well, you know, my grandfather, Holmgren, he had a six-seater plane. He co-owned it with a couple other people. And that made sense in Nevada because you could park that plane anywhere in Nevada.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could use the field as a runway.
Well, you need to have your gas.
You know,
and
New
your...
York, Long Island, I don't know.
Well, you'd figure somehow. Hell, as usual, good stuff, buddy. Thank you. S&P futures up 10 now only. We were up 20 when we came in. NASDAQ futures up 48. Again, still up. We're trying to make back yesterday's loss. We probably will. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy.
That's all, folks.